Listen, I want to pick up where we left off in the book of Hosea. Hosea chapter 4 is where we left off. And for those of you who weren't here when we started this book, Hosea wrote this book around 750 B.C., around that period of time, just before the judgment fell upon the northern tribes of Israel for all of their unfaithfulness and their idolatry and their godlessness. And God used Hosea in a very, very unique way to try to get the attention of his people, to try to turn them around, but of course they wouldn't listen. So this chapter 4 is a continuation of God's indictment against them, also what their specific sins are. And I when reading this, I think it's just more up to date than tomorrow's newspaper in terms of its parallels with this country, with the type of idolatry and immorality and godlessness that this country seems to be tumbling headlong into. It's hard for me to imagine. It's just beyond my comprehension how Israel of old could have been worse at this particular time than America is today. So I just see the two going hand in hand as far as the warning. So he says in that verse 1 in chapter 4, he says, "Listen to the word of the Lord, O sons of Israel, for the Lord has a case against the inhabitants of the land, because there is no faithfulness or kindness or knowledge of God in the land. There is swearing and deception and murder and stealing and adultery, and they employ violence so that bloodshed follows bloodshed. And therefore the land mourns, and every one who lives in it languishes, along with the beasts of the field and the birds of the sky, and also the fish of the sea disappear." Okay, before we go any further, let's just back up and break this down, what he's saying. Verse 1 of chapter 4 says, "Listen to the word of the Lord, O sons of Israel." And, there's probably about 4,000 different times in the Bible, at least that you hear the phrase, "Thus saith the Lord," or "the Lord God says," and here it says, "Listen to the word of the Lord." This is something that I think is so paramount. When just starting off, it emphasizes who's doing the talking here. I think that this is so often this can just go over people's heads, that this isn't Hosea speaking, this isn't a man speaking, this isn't a mere mortal, this is the eternal God of the universe that is saying these things. And I think once you get that kind of into focus, I think it takes on a lot deeper meaning than if you just simply read it and let it go in one ear and out the other over your head. Because it says, "Listen to the word of the Lord, O sons of Israel." And to me, you could easily say, "Listen to the word of the Lord, you sons of America." He says, "For the Lord has a case against the inhabitants of the land, Israel," but also you could just substitute that, "the inhabitants of the land of America, because there is no faithfulness or kindness or knowledge of God in the land." And I think this is where we have gotten today. When it says there's no faithfulness, this applies all over the turf, but he's primarily referring to faithfulness to God. People have forsaken God. Now, here's the thing. They hold to a form of godliness, but their hearts are far from God, like it says in Isaiah. In America today, like I said, you can have between 90 and 96% of the people in this country claim to believe in God. About 90% of the people claim to be Christian. But where is the faithfulness? If there was true, genuine faithfulness to God in this country, we wouldn't be in the moral decline that we're in. We wouldn't be in the mess that we're in, morally, spiritually, ethically, and every other way. You look at the problems that this country has, and it's this state in particular, you can see it's because of a lack of faithfulness to God. But also, there's a lack of faithfulness in our relationships with one another. It's all disintegrating. Marriages are... one out of two marriages has ended up in a divorce, and the statistics aren't much better for the Christian church. So the faithfulness has just gone out. In other words, if you read a little bit further, what's happening here is that because we forsake God, it has a direct correlation between how we interact with one another. And it says here, there's no faithfulness in the land or kindness. That word kindness is a real broad word. But to me, a word that I think can interchange with kindness real easily is the word thoughtfulness. When I think of a person who's kind, I think of a person who's thoughtful. When people read this, I don't think that they really see what it's trying to say. For example, you can have people who consider themselves to be decent people, good people, whatever, but they show no kindness, no thoughtfulness for other people. I was just listening to the radio the other day, and one of the commentators was just really ranting and raving because he's so sick and tired of people who take off, for example, these mufflers on their Harley-Davidsons so they can make this tremendous noise going up and down the street. Or how about people who just let their dogs bark day and night, okay, never do anything about it? Or, you know, how about people who are just coming down the road and they got their radio just blasting to the point where it actually vibrates your house? I mean, I think we all know what we're talking about here. To me, that's an utter lack of thoughtfulness, an utter lack of kindness, an utter lack of respect. And there's no respect for people anymore. It's like, hey, I'm going to do my thing and hell with you. And if my dog's barking, I'll just as soon give you the middle finger than do something about it. This is what I mean. What happens when people begin to forget God, forsake God, their interactions with one another become, I think, more and more uncivil. There becomes enormous strain and tension and hatred and animosity and between each other. So he says there's no faithfulness or kindness or knowledge of God in the land. And that's the problem. There's no knowledge of God in this country. And when it's talking about knowledge here, it's not head knowledge. We got a lot of head knowledge about Abraham Lincoln. We could have a lot of head knowledge about God. But when it's talking about not a lack of knowledge or there's no knowledge of God in the land, it's talking about an intimacy with God. I mean, you go back to, all the way back to Genesis, in various places in Scripture, the Bible always talks about when a husband and a wife consummate their relationship in a sexual relations. The Bible always refers to that as knowing one another, like Adam knew his wife. Okay, that meant that there was sexual relations. When we know God, obviously it's not sexual relations, but what it's talking about here is an intimate knowledge of God. There's a one-on-one relationship with God. That's how you get a knowledge of God. That's what he's referring to. There's no knowledge of God in the land because people just give God lip service. And that really characterizes this country. Now, I'm not talking about everybody in church. I'm not talking about everybody in this country. I'm talking about this country as a whole. But, you know, there are individuals who have a deep knowledge of God and a deep commitment to God and a love and fear of God. But as a whole, we don't have it. And what's the end result? It says in that verse 2, there is swearing, deception, murder, stealing, adultery. They employ violence, so the bloodshed follows bloodshed. I mean, that's just to me sums up this, that characterizes this country. When you don't have a knowledge of God, when you forsake God, what is there? Swearing? That's breaking the, thou shalt not use the name of the Lord thy God in vain. This is something where people just swear automatically. I mean, it's just like they use God's name in vain or Jesus' name in vain to punctuate a sentence. Like Isaiah said, when he first saw God, when he was catapulted into a vision of God, the first thing that came to his mind, he says, woe is me, for I am undone, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell among a people of unclean lips. And if we really stop to analyze, you know, what comes out of our mouth, I think it's very important. It shows a lot about where we are with our relationship with God. I think it was James who said something to the effect that the tongue is the very world of iniquity, and by it is set on fire by hell itself. I mean, we use our tongue to curse and to put down other people, or we use it to bless God. And he says, hey, that's not the way it should be. He says, nobody can tame the tongue. The tongue, he says, is a deadly poison. The best you can do with the tongue is control it under the power of God. There's no truthfulness here. The people are deceiving one another, lying to one another. And it says here, deception, murder. This is an end result of a lack of knowledge of God, where people begin to kill one another. It was Jesus who said, hey, it is written, thou shalt not kill. But I say unto you, if you're even angry with your brother in your heart, you're guilty of murder. So even though people might not go out and kill one another, if they have a contemptuous spirit for another human being, Jesus said, that's breaking the spirit of the law, and so you're guilty of murder as far as God is concerned. If there's bitterness, hatred, resentment, animosity that ferments in our heart towards another human being, as far as God's concerned, that's murder. And, of course, that's just all over the turf today. And then it says stealing. I often thought to myself, you know, if people in this world would just keep one commandment, okay, God's given us 10 commandments to live by, but if we break all the rest of them like people do, but just keep the one commandment, can you imagine if everybody in this world kept the commandment, thou shalt not steal? I mean, in the letter of it as well as the spirit of it, can you imagine what kind of world this would be? I mean, I try to think of it, and I think this world would be a virtual utopia if people did not steal from one another. There would be such a tremendous boon as far as financially or economically for us. In other words, just in ways that if people didn't steal from one another, we wouldn't have to pay these exorbitant insurance premiums. You know, you wouldn't have to spend so much darn money as far as for locks, for security systems. I mean, the list can go on and on and on and on. Okay, how many murders could be avoided if people didn't steal. It can go right down the line. I mean, even things like adultery or rape, things like that, would fall in the category of stealing, in a sense, because you're stealing another person's spouse, or rape, you steal another, you know, you're taking something that doesn't belong to you by force. I mean, all of these things would fall under the category of stealing. Don't you think? And can you imagine what this world would be like, what this country would be like, if we just kept the one commandment? I mean, you could break the rest of them, but if you just kept the one. And you know, but this becomes very, very prevalent, what happens when people forget God. This nation forgets God, so people steal left and right. And he also says that what characterizes the land is adultery. This is, again, what happens is there's a complete moral breakdown of morality. And I think it's kind of significant, too, because one of the last, the U.S. News and World Report, I think it's kind of interesting. This was the last week's issue. It talks about teens and sex, and how it's just becoming an epidemic in terms of what's happening on our school campuses, where there's just an out-of-control sexually transmitted diseases. There's, unwanted pregnancies. One of the articles here talks about risky business, and it says here teens are having more sex and getting more diseases, but is telling them to wait the answer. And I think that's kind of significant, because what's implied here is that everybody, all these teens are having sex, but you can't tell them to wait because that's being irresponsible. And going along with this is an advertisement that was in the Sacramento Bee. I don't know if anybody's seen this or not, but I thought it was kind of, it's almost a full page ad. They got a guy and a girl here walking down the street with their arm around each other, and it says they're 15. And then underneath the caption, it says, they're 15, they're in love, and they're having sex. It says, while not all young people are having sex, many are. And the reality is, a sexually active teen that does not regularly and properly use contraception has a 90% chance of pregnancy within 1 year. So while adults debate the merits of abstinence-forced education, we must pay attention to the teens that they are already sexually active. So this is the answer here. In other words, they're trying to say, don't preach abstinence. What you got to tell them is, be safe. To me, it doesn't take a great deal of insight to see why we're having this runaway epidemic with sexually transmitted diseases, with abortions, with unwanted pregnancies, with all these other things, because this is the message that comes across. This is the liberal, you know, godless answer to everything, rather than looking to God. This was Israel then, about 750 years before Christ. And I see it as far as America today. It says they employ violence, so the bloodshed followed bloodshed. Murder rate is almost epidemic in this country, and especially if you count the number of abortions. I mean, there's been over 40 million unborn children that have been murdered in this country. And it says here they employ violence. I mean, these abortion mills are nothing more than, you know, money makers when it comes to killing human beings. And I'm thinking, well, how much longer is God going to put up with this? I mean, if he lowered the boom on Israel a couple decades after Hosea preached in their situation, I mean, how much longer is he going to put up with us? And he says in verse 3, therefore the land mourns, and everyone who lives in it languishes, along with the beasts of the field and the birds of the sky, and also the fish of the sea disappear. Now, what he seems to be describing here is probably one of the judgments God brought upon Israel to try to get their attention was he brought drought upon the northern tribes of Israel. And, you know, we had a severe drought back east, but we've had droughts all over this country. And what God is doing is he's orchestrating all kinds of natural disasters and calamities to try to get man's attention. I don't care whether they're earthquakes or floods or droughts or forest fires, you know, or tornadoes or hurricanes or typhoons or whatever the situation may be. He's constantly trying to get people's attention. It's almost like, hey, you know, wake up. You're on a collision course with this judgment. And that's what God is saying here. As far as what he's done for these people, he says they all languish. And I think, unfortunately, even the people that are faithful to God are living in a society that's under God's judgment. So we languish in many respects. We also feel the brunt end of a lot of what's going on. I mean, it says here that everyone who lives in it languishes. I mean, I think sometimes I find myself, You know, this really applies to a lot of people who just languish in terms of trying to make ends meet, living from paycheck to paycheck, trying to just pay the bills. I mean, we're all under this curse because of our faithlessness to God. And then he says here in verse 4, says, this I think is just classic, because it says in verse 4, in spite of the fact that this is the way people are acting, and in spite of the fact that God tries to bring people around through his judgments or through his chastisement, through nature, you know, through droughts or whatever. Look what it says in verse 4. This, if this doesn't describe America, I don't know what does, because it says here, let no one find fault and let no one offer reproof, for your people are like those who contend with the priest. What that's saying here is this. Imagine somebody standing up, for example, especially if he happens to be a political figure, especially if he has to be some kind of, you know, some kind of leadership role. I don't care if he's a darn celebrity. If he stands up and says something to this effect, hey, you know what? Let's call an ace, a spade, a spade. This AIDS epidemic that has claimed millions of lives and millions of more people are succumbing to the HIV virus. This is a direct judgment from Almighty God for a man's immoral behavior. Stand up and say that. Okay, what's going to happen to you? What's going to happen? I mean, to me, it's obvious. If you stand up and say, hey, you know, this is a judgment from God because of breaking his laws, you are going to be lambasted, especially if you're a politician. Or you stand up and say, hey, abortion is murder, and this has got to stop. What's going to happen to you? Read this again. Yet, let no one find fault and let none offer reproof. Why? For your people are like those who contend with the priest. In other words, a person who contend with a priest was a person who was arrogant, who was defiant, who was rebellious, who was self-sufficient. I mean, they don't want to listen to what God has to say. They have their own agenda. Then they say, don't confuse me with the facts. My mind is made up. And this is what happens when you deal with people, when you confront them on issues like homosexuality or issues such as fornication or issues such as abortion, man, you are going to be lambasted in this country. So that's the way Israel was before, during Hosea's day. And in verse 5 it says, so you will stumble by day and the prophet will stumble with you by night, and I will destroy your mother. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge because you have rejected knowledge. I also will reject you from being my priest since you have forgotten the law of your God. I also will forget your children. Now, what he's saying here, I think, is very classic. To me, it really applies to our country. He says, so you will stumble by day, and the prophet will stumble with you by night, and I will destroy your mother. So he's talking here about the people. He's going to specifically narrow it down to the religious leaders. But he says, because they have forsaken him, the people do what? They stumble by day. When it's stumbling by day, in other words, they are incapable of making common sense decisions. Incapable of it. And it says here, the prophet also will stumble with you by night. The people who are supposed to be God's spokesmen, they will stumble by night. In other words, if our leaders cannot make common sense, intelligent decisions on things that are so obvious of what needs to be done, then what's going to happen when there's things that are by night? In other words, and the things that are not as obvious, but we need God's insight, we need his understanding. Well, this is what we have when we have leadership like Davis, and leadership that's especially in the Democratic Party, but you know, that goes across both boards, and you know, Republican too. So many people today do not have a love and a knowledge and fear of God, so they stumble by day and they stumble by night. Every decision they make is counterproductive. It's not in the best interest of this country, because it means, hey, I don't want to lose any votes here. So they're not doing what's in the best interest of our state, in the best interest of America, in the best interest of our country. No. So why? Because we're stumbling by day because there's no fear of God. The Bible says, fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and if there's no fear of God, then there's no wisdom, and you can see it. And it says, and I will destroy your mother. Their mother is symbolically speaking here of Israel. God is going to destroy this nation. If God is specifically speaking, for example, against the spiritual leaders of this country, if he says to the spiritual leaders of America, I'm going to destroy your mother, well, your mother is America. That's who he's referring to. You're going to destroy this country. Then he says here in verse 6, he says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge because they have rejected knowledge. You know, the Bible says not only the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, but it says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. It says that in Proverbs. And it says here, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge because they have rejected knowledge. You know, I've said this 1,000 times. Knowing a problem is half solving it. If you really know what a problem is, you can solve it. Like, for example, if your car breaks down, if you don't know what the problem is, I mean, you could be scratching your head from now till the cows come home and not do anything, get anything done about it. But if you know what the problem is, hey, knowing it's half solving it. I don't care what the problem is. But if we don't have this kind of knowledge, how are we going to solve our problems? It says here, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. This nation is being destroyed. Why? Because of our lack of knowledge of the truth. Why? Because we have rejected the truth. You can't pray in school. Here's a classic example. In Harvard, they're having a valedictorian that's going to give a speech at his graduation that's titled The American Jihad. Now, jihad is a holy war. Now, would they allow a Christian to stand up there and mention the word God or mention Jesus Christ or mention his religion? Could he give a talk about the American Christian church? You see what I'm saying? It's like he'd be running out of town on a rail for mentioning God. But these other people come in here and force this stuff down our throats and everybody's clapping. I mean, what's happening? We are being destroyed for lack of knowledge. Why? Because we have rejected knowledge. We've rejected the truth. It says, I also will reject you from being my priest, since you have forgotten the law of your God, and I will forget your children. Now, he's basically laying the blame at the priests, the religious leaders. Look what's going on in what's happening in the Catholic Church. I mean, it's a shame. It's a shame of what's going on there. And then I heard on the radio yesterday that some priest was arrested in some, you know, rest stop for exposing himself. And I'm thinking, what in the world is wrong with this country and these people? What is happening to these people? That these spiritual leaders can act in such a way to bring such disgrace to not just themselves, but to the church, to God. Do they give an occasion for God's enemies to blaspheme, for weaker Christians to stumble? But he's laying it right there at their feet. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've heard probably thousands of sermons in my life, and you know, I just shake my head sometimes thinking that, you know, these spiritual leaders really need to come across with the God's truth instead of just always coming across with kind of I'm okay, you're okay kind of mentality, kind of sermon, a mild-mannered preacher with a mild-mannered sermon, delivering to mild-mannered people so they can all go home mild-mannered and nobody's changed. I mean, people just sit like a cabbage in a pew and they don't struggle, they don't change, they don't grow, you know. So it's the priest's fault. But then again, like people like priests, it's like it's going to say right here, since you have forgotten the law of your God, I will also forget your children. In other words, they're going to bring a curse upon themselves that God's not going to bless their children. And in a sense, too, the Bible says in the New Testament that we are all priests. Peter tells us that in the New Testament. We are all priests of God. A priest is somebody that represents God to man and man to God. So if you are the priest of your house, as a spiritual leader of your house, if you don't bring up your children in love and knowledge and fear of God, if you don't train them up the way they should go, if you don't direct them in the truth and God's values, well then, you know, they're not going to have God's blessing. And it's going to be your fault. And it says here in that verse 7, it says, the more they multiplied, the more they sinned against me, I will change their glory into shame. I mean, this is their country, and this is our country. I mean, the more God prospered us, what? The more they multiplied, I don't care whether it's, you know, your population or your material things or all the blessings given. The more they multiplied, the more they sinned against me. I will change their glory into shame. And that's what's coming to this country. It says, they feed on the sin of my people. Now he's talking here about the priests. They feed on the sins of my people and direct their desire towards their iniquity. And it will be like people, like priests, so I will punish them for their ways, and I will repay them for their deeds. And they will eat, but they will not have enough, and they will play the harlot, but not increase, because they have stopped giving heed to the Lord. He's talking here primarily about the priests when it says they feed on the sin of my people and direct their desire towards their iniquity. In other words, when people come in to offer sacrifice to God, you know, they would perpetuate their sins. These priests were engaged in so much of the convoluted beliefs in God. Because remember, this is the northern kingdom now. And God gave specific instructions on how he was to be worshipped. And he was to be worshipped at that particular place down in Israel at the temple in Jerusalem. But these priests in the northern tribes encouraged people to worship God in a false way. Now, they were still worshipping the one true God, but they had so perverted the one true worship. It's like if you read in the New Testament, Paul talks about how there's another Jesus. He says, if another one comes along and preaches another Jesus, you accept this beautifully. Another Jesus. How many people believe in Jesus, but they've got a cockamamie idea of what Jesus is? I mean, they have completely distorted, you know, the true Jesus of the Bible. And that's what's happening to people today. I mean, go to any homosexual church that claims to be Christian. That's a perversion of the true Jesus. There's no question about it. Go to anybody who claims to be Christian and yet is pro-abortion, pro-death. They call it pro-choice. But, you know, how can you reconcile that with the true Jesus? Okay, they got a different Jesus because they say, well, this Jesus is one who's compassionate and loving and so on and so forth. Then you just shake your head and you say, man, this isn't the Jesus of the Bible. You see what I'm saying? This is what happens to these people, is that they feed on the sin of my people, they direct their desire towards their iniquity. You know, tell them what they want to hear. This is what Paul warned about would be in the last days. He said that people would reject the truth and then they would accumulate for themselves teachers who would tickle their ear. Tell them what they want to hear. And then it says here, in verse 9, it says, it will be like people like priests, so I will punish them for their ways and repay them for their deeds. You know, I've said this so many times too. A church will seldom rise above the spirituality of its leaders. And it's so true. If your leadership is cold, lukewarm, apathetic, indifferent, that's what you're going to find in the pew. I think if you find spiritual leadership that's really, you know, committed to God and sold out to God and on fire for God, it's going to have its effect in a pew. But then it almost comes full circle. Like Shakespeare said, the wheel has come full circle. So in other words, you can see the same thing like people, like priests. And you see the same thing as far as in politics. Like politicians, like people. Then in verse 10, it says, and they will eat, but they will not have enough. They will play the harlot, but not increase, because they have stopped giving heed to the Lord. This is just a direct judgment. When we forsake God, we're just reduced to what? A hand-to-mouth existence. We're reduced to living the paycheck to paycheck. We're living under in just one stressful situation after another. This is all judgment. Then he says here in verse 11, harlotry, wine, new wine, take away understanding. My people consult their wooden idol, and their diviners, wand, informs them. For a spirit of harlotry has led them astray, and they have played the harlot, departing from their God. Backing up to that verse 11, harlotry, wine, new wine, take away understanding. A harlotry, he's talking about their immorality. You can just almost replace that harlotry for immorality, wine, new wine. I think that's kind of significant because it's what these people were into, okay, as far as their moral practices, what they had fallen into. It took away their spiritual understanding. But not only that, it says wine and new wine. He makes a differentiation here, and I think it's kind of significant because you could apply the wine, obviously, to anything that intoxicates. And then it talks about the new wine. You can make all kinds of applications here. Take, for example, the boob tube, the TV. All right? This really takes away people's understanding of God. Because, look, there's so much hype all the time about the new programs, the new lineups, the new whatever else that comes out every year or every season. All right? There's these new shows. And it's like, this is what people look for. All of these new entertainments, but what do they do in terms of our relationship with God? So much of it takes away our understanding of God. You sit in front of this boob tube 54 hours a week, and believe me, your understanding, spiritual knowledge, is going to evaporate in a real hurry. And that's what he's talking about here. But these people, you know, always coming up with new ways, new thrills, new joys that took away their understanding of God. He says, harlotry, wine, new wine, take away the understanding. My people consult the wooden idol, and their diviner's wand informed them. You know what? I mean, I think it's kind of significant. They consulted these things. But today, who do people consult for wisdom. I mean, if you look at these talk show hosts, for example, like Oprah and Ricky Lake and Jerry Springer, all these others. Okay, I think it was Charles Colson who said something to the effect that all of these talk shows have now become the new town forum, or where people get together and they vote as to whether they approve of a certain lifestyle or not. You know, when they parade all these people with all of their, immoral practices, and then you got the audience chiming in whether they agree or disagree. This is the forum that we have today as far as people's compass, moral compass. It's no wonder it's so screwed up. If you look at these people, what these people consult, it says, my people consult their wooden idol, okay, and their diviner's wand to inform them. I mean, you can apply that to the TV. It says, for a spirit of harlotry has led them astray, and they have played the harlot, departing from their God. It says, they offer sacrifices on the tops of mountains and burn incense on the hills and under oak and poplar and terebinth because their shade is pleasant. Therefore, their daughters play the harlot, and their brides commit adultery. I will not punish your daughters when they play the harlot, or your brides when they commit adultery, for men themselves go apart with harlots and offer sacrifices with temple prostitutes, so the people without understanding are ruined. Now, what he's talking about here is all these different places of worship that they instituted up in the northern tribes of Israel. Keep in mind, they incorporated all these pagan practices into worshiping the one true God. And a lot of their pagan practices involved what it was these rituals where they would be, offering sacrifice to God or incense to God, but they would incorporate into their worship service all kinds of immorality, where they had what they call temple prostitutes. In other words, she would get paid for somebody to go to have sex with her. And in this copulation, it was supposed to bring down God's favor that the man and his family, or that his crops or everything that he owned would be fertile. Okay, this was a pagan Canaanite practice where they incorporated it into the worship of God. All right, and he's saying that the women, the young women, were playing the harlot. They were using young girls in this religious pagan practice. And not only that, that married women were involved in this too, so they were committing adultery. But God was saying, hey, I'm not going to blame them, these women, for being involved in this form of prostitution and harlotry. I'm blaming the men, because the men are the ones that have instituted this and that are really keeping it going. So he's going to punish them all. I mean, if you look at it from our perspective, over 2,700 years later, it's the same thing. All the immorality, all the godlessness, all the alternate lifestyles, whatever you want to call them, this is all an affront to God. But who's pushing it? In other words, when you see this kind of thing here, I just shared with you, when you see that 15-year-olds are having sex, okay, and you see it all over the paper, teen sex. I mean, it's just epidemic as far as all the consequences of teen sex. It's almost as God saying, hey, I'm not blaming them. I'm blaming you adults for what's happening here. That's what God is saying here. He's saying, I'm not blaming the women here. I'm blaming you men. You're the ones who are responsible for what's going on here. Not that these people are going to get off scot-free, but just that he's putting the blame where it really belongs. And that's why it just galls me when you have these people. For example, look at the Supreme Court. All right? Look at the Supreme Court. They just passed a law the other day, a couple, 3 weeks ago, saying that computer-generated pedophilia on the Internet, porn, is a constitutional right. They said you can't take that away. Does that make sense to you? In other words, that's what our Supreme Court says, that computerized child porn is okay. So who's God going to blame when you have people that are inflamed with this kind of pornography, and then they go out there and start molesting little children? These people who molest little children, these pedophiles, yeah, they're going to be punished severely. But who's really to blame? It's these people who are in charge, who are coming up with these convoluted, stupid, asinine laws that, on one hand, throw the Ten Commandments out the window, make it against the law to mention God, to pray to God at school, but all this other stuff is okay. So when you see an epidemic among young people as far as fornication and adultery and homosexuality, who's really to blame? It's the leaders. And that's what God is saying here in regards to what's happening. And he says here, verse 15, he says, though you, Israel, play the harlot, do not let Judah become guilty. It says, also, do not go to Gilgal or up to Beth Haven and take the oath as the Lord lives. Since Israel is stubborn like a stubborn heifer, can the Lord now pasture them like a lamb in a large field? In other words, what he's saying here is the southern tribe, he's saying to Judah, he says, hey, don't you start acting like them. Don't go up there and start worshiping in their worship services, because you're going to be corrupted by them. We are told that in the New Testament, that be not deceived, bad company corrupts good morals, right? I mean, you're going to hang around with thieves, you're going to become a thief. You're going to hang around with people who, you know, are immoral, you're going to become immoral. You're going to hang around with blasphemers, you're going to become a blasphemer. You're going to hang around with dope addicts, you're going to become a dope addict. So God is saying to the people in the southern tribes, don't go up there, don't get involved with these people, stay away from them, because, hey, they're going to lead you astray and they're going to come under judgment. And he says here, but what happens? Since Israel is stubborn like a stubborn heifer. Is this the United States or not? We are so stubborn when it comes to, you know, the things of God. We want to have it our way. We are not going to give God any kind of foothold in our classrooms, in our schools, in our courts, in our judicial system, in our government. I mean, we are just stubborn, just like what happened in Israel. And it says here, they are stubborn heifer. Can the Lord pasture them like a lamb in a large field? This is the analogy he makes. In other words, you got a lamb in a large field. It's just going to run off and do its own thing. And it's going to get devoured. It's going to get killed. It's going to get destroyed. It's going to get hurt, struck lame. Something's going to happen to that lamb, because it's too hard for God to pasture that, you know, rebellious lamb in a large field. He's just going to run off and do his thing and get killed. That's what he's saying here, that's what they're like. And then he says here, verse 17, Ephraim is joined to idols. Let him alone. Ephraim is another name, a synonymous name for the northern tribes of Israel. Ephraim is joined to idols. Let him alone. That, to me, is a very dark, solemn warning. Because it's almost as though God could say this to America today. America is joined to idols. Let her alone. In other words, God's saying, hey, you have passed the point of no return. I mean, to me, I think this country is way past the point of any return. Now, God is capable of doing anything, but I don't see it. I see individual people coming to God, to Christ, but I don't see us as a nation, okay, turning or changing. Because why? America is joined to idols. Let her alone. Can you imagine America having a change of heart where she really turns and says, hey, let's do away with all our pornography. Let's do away with all our blasphemy on TV. Let's do away with all our immorality, our immoral practices, our homosexuality. Let's do away with our abortions and our murder of the unborn. Can you see this happening? No. No, it's not going to happen, because as a country, we love our sin. So God said, okay, you love your sin, you're wedded to idols, okay, I'm going to leave you alone. In other words, you've passed the point of any return. There's nothing left for you but judgment. And in verse 18, he says, their liquor gone, they play the harlot continually. Their rulers dearly love shame. The wind wraps them in its wings, and they shall be ashamed because of their sacrifices. It says, their liquor gone. In other words, they're stone drunk. I mean, look at this country. Apply it spiritually. When you are drunk, it affects the way you act, the way you think, the way you talk, the way you perceive things, right? When you're drunk. That's what drunkenness will do to you. Well, America is drunk not on wine necessarily. It's drunk on their own self-centeredness, their own selfishness. I mean, you look at our politicians. They are drunk with their power. They have no desire to really do what's best for this nation if it's going to cost them some votes, or it's going to make them unpopular. See what I'm saying? You can't find a politician who's going to stand up and say the right thing and do the right thing in the eyes of God. Why? Because they're drunk. They're stone drunk. They can't. It affects the way everything they do. That's why we got this governor who, to me, you know, epitomizes what it is to be drunk with power. It says they play the harlot continually. Okay, I mean, they just look for you know, ways to be unfaithful to God. It says their rulers dearly love shame. In other words, they're corrupt. They're out for bribes. They love shame. I mean, it's an everyday thing. I mean, you just pick up the paper and you just see one corrupt episode after another with these politicians. Isn't it true? I mean, it's just a front page today. That's all you see. It's one corrupt thing after another after another. This is what's happening when we turn our back on God. This is the rulers do we love shame. But look at that last verse, verse 19. The wind wraps them in its wings, and they will be ashamed because of their sacrifices. In other words, you've heard the old adage, they sow to the wind, they reap the whirlwind. They're going to be swept away in judgment. The wind wraps them in their wings, and they will be ashamed because of their sacrifices. Well, when America is swept away in judgment, then, and only then, I think they're going to really come to their senses and be ashamed for what we've done in terms of, you know, turning our back on God. Does anybody want to add or share?